The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept. Yeah.
You are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Very nice to have you with me on this Look Back Friday, a variant of The Doctor Is In. This is where we take previous calls, edited at the capable hands of my producer man, Andrew Krucek, and then I comment more. Now, obviously, we don't do therapy on this program. We don't diagnose. But there are always things you can talk about on different directions, in different directions, about the call. And obviously, you're guided by the questions that the caller asks or what seems to be of utmost concern to the caller. But there are times when I would like to go off on a different direction, and I don't, for many reasons. And I use Look Back Friday to go off in some of those directions. So we will get to that. Item of business here. Back when I was, younger. You know, pretty much back is younger. There's just no way about it. This is as old as I've ever been. I wrote some columns, and those columns were in different publications. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I could get back into the advice column writing business. And I think I have a bent for it. What happens is if you approach some of these larger syndicates, they want a sample. They'll send you a question, and then you have to write the answer, and they'll see if it fits and if they like it, etc. So they sent me this sample question. Dear Dr. Ray, the other day, I left for work, leaving my husband in the house watching TV. I hadn't gone more than a mile when my engine conked out and the car shuddered to a halt. I walked back home only to find my husband sitting in the kitchen table holding our neighbor lady's hands, looking at her very romantically. He was let go from his job 6 months ago. He says he's been feeling increasingly depressed. I love him very much, but I'm feeling like I can't trust him. Advice, please. Sincerely, frustrated. So I wrote my answer, and they want you to keep it short. Dear frustrated, a car stalling can be caused by a variety of faults with the engine. Check that there's no debris in the fuel line. If it's clear, check the Jubilee clips holding the vacuum pipes onto the inlet manifold. It could be that the fuel pump itself is faulty, causing low delivery pressure to the carburetor float chamber. I hope this helps. Dr. Ray. Now, I sent this back to them. It's been 2 years now. I have not heard. So I'm gonna resend it. I'm going to check the mail. I don't know exactly what happened. I thought I was pretty clear about this. All right. Got that. Being a psychologist, when you're trained and you come out of grad school and you're first clinically practicing, you're feeling pretty good. You know, you're gonna help people. Get people to alter the directions of their lives, cope better. And what you find out, and there's all kinds of research to back this up, is that psychotherapy is not all that effective. And there's reasons for that. Sometimes it's because some of the therapists aren't very good. But one of the reasons is that it takes a lot of cooperation on the part of the client. You can't sprinkle magic dust on somebody and have them get better. no matter what you tell them, they've got to use it. They've got to absorb it. Got to practice it. Takes time, takes effort, takes motivation. Takes when they get tired of paying you. I recognize that as a psychologist, I can't change people. Well, Dr. A, that sounds funny. What I mean is this. I can't change anybody who doesn't really want to be changed or who doesn't recognize there's things they can change or doesn't want to do anything differently or doesn't want to put the effort into doing anything differently. In essence, they're not. And I recognize this. If I didn't recognize that, I would have long ago gotten out of psychology. Because the secret is that most people who come to therapy leave without getting any better. And most of the time it's because they don't stay very long. Now, all that said, you help who you can help. On a day-to-day basis, if you want to live more even keel, emotionally not so quickly upset, you have to recognize, absorb, accept, live by a major theme. And that is, quit trying to change people. Dr. Ray, as Christians, we are obligated. We are obligated to speak the truth. That is very true. You are obligated to speak the truth. Where you can, where you recognize it's not going to lead to hostility necessarily in the relationship. But the problem becomes when people in our near social circle have acted the same way they've acted. They've always been this way. They've always acted this way. And the frustrating part of it is they don't recognize they're that way, or they don't agree that they're that way. Or they apologize for being that way, but they really don't translate that apology into change in conduct. Kind of like we all do when we go to confession and we apologize and then we do the same sins. So when you frustrate yourself over that person is not acting like I would like them to act, or as I think they should, they're not acting right, you really put yourself in a blackmailed spot, because you can't make them act differently if they don't want to cooperate. No matter what you say, no matter how skillful you say it. But Dr. Ray, I mean, you got to try to help people. You got to help them live better. You got to give them good guidance. You got to give them advice. Yes, that's true. That is true. But when it becomes clear they don't want it, they're not going to change. They don't see a reason for change. They don't like what you're saying. You got to come to the conclusion that I can't do anything about how they act. I can only work on myself to not be as upset about it. That's especially helpful in marriages. If you got a spouse that has a certain habit, certain verbal type habit, that's just constantly irritating you or frustrating you. And of course, you've been married 24 years and you're trying to figure out how to get this to stop. And you've tried so many times. You've had so many arguments over it. Because you're still operating out of the philosophy, there's got to be a way to change this person. That may not be true. That's the reality of the human condition, the fallen human condition. When somebody's difficult, one of the main features of being difficult is they don't recognize they're difficult. If they recognized they were difficult, they wouldn't be as difficult because they would be open to doing something about it, which would make them less difficult. If you want to live a more even-keeled life, you got to more quickly come to the realization that you can't make everybody be different. Not if they don't want to be. Not if they don't want to cooperate. Not if they don't want to hear it. We struggle endlessly figuring there's got to be a way to get them to see. Well, take a lesson from me. They come into therapy, 3, 4, 5, 6 sessions maybe. We explore it. We explore it much more deeply than the average person explores somebody else's behavior. And they still don't change it. And I live with that as a therapist. That is the way it is. You can give the greatest advice in the world. You can give the most helpful guidance in the world. But if the person doesn't want to do it or is willing but only so much, then you have to recognize. That'll be $100, please. All righty. When we come back, we're going to dive into, I used to say tackle, but that's, I don't know, with everybody turning against football, I don't know how long it's going to be before you can't even use that word anymore. We will blitz. No, you can't use that one either. We will rush into, I mean, that's probably okay, a couple of the past questions on The Doctor Is In.
The Doctor Is In.
What can I say? I'm thrilled.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I come from the other side of the tracks, see? My uncle used to have slot machines. Put one nickel in and it emptied. Boom. And I brought him home in a bag, and my mother looked at me. Where did you get all that money? I said, I won him. You didn't win him. He fixed the machine. I didn't care if he fixed the machine or not, you know?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Steve Ray here. Next year's a jubilee year, and we're going to celebrate it in Rome. But not only Rome. This is our Saints and Shrines of Italy pilgrimage, and joining us is our good friend Teresa Tomeo.
Yes, Steve, fantastico. Walking through the holy doors, immersing ourselves in the deeply Catholic culture of Italy. I'll be joining you and Janet in Florence and Assisi.
Join us this May for the jubilee year, from Milan to Florence and much more, all the way to Rome.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
Joining me, Dr. Ray Grandy here. Really appreciate the company on this Look Back Friday. Let's talk to Maureen from Florida because, oh boy, you know, people say, I can't believe somebody said that. That quote-unquote hurts. That is just something that is way over the top. Fired straight at the heart. Well, how do you get past something like that, huh?
I have a mother who's 90. I'm 69. My mom's 91, actually. But when my sister Bridget was in from England visiting, we were out at a nice restaurant, and we were talking about my mother's age, and Bridget said to Mom, Mom, is there anything in your life you would have done differently? And my mother said in front of Bridget, myself, and my husband, yeah, I wouldn't have had any children. And she meant it, and it was harsh. She meant it as far as she meant she wanted to say how it was very hurtful. But I think she wanted to say it to intentionally hurt us that badly. My sister took it lightly. She comes in once a year or so, and my sister laughed. And my husband and I sat there looking at each other like, are we really at this table?
All righty. All right. Let's parse your mother's remark. I'm going to assume she's completely clear. There's no signs of early dementia. Not early. There's no signs of beginning dementia. Okay, so she's perfectly clear. Okay?
She just moved herself out of her home without involving any of us, without telling us. Okay. Had three trucks pull up, took everything away, and she's now in assisted living here. Yeah.
You're helping me. Maureen, you're helping me with my speculation. You want to know what my speculation is?
It's been ongoing for a lifetime.
It is. She's saying, she's not really saying, I wish I didn't have any children. She's probably saying, I wish my children were more involved in my life than they've been. Or I wish my children... Yes, ma'am?
Doctor, you know what's sad? No. I've lived down here with her for 30 years and go to the same parish. No. No, you know what it is? I must give you a little more information.
Now, Maureen, you got to be real careful. You got to be real careful here. I'm going to warn you.
I know.
You're disagreeing with me, and that puts you really on risky waters here. But I'm going
to let it... only reason I say that, I've been years in counseling, and I never wanted to realize that my own mother could be a narcissist. I didn't even
okay.
really
then here's how I can be right and you can be right. Are you ready?
Yes.
If you're going to use that word, narcissist.
I don't like using it.
I know it's a bad word. But what you're saying is, my mother's incredibly self-centered. My mother worries about herself. My mother's all concerned about herself, right? That's what you're saying. Correct? Which means the fact that you were down there for 30 years and the fact that it certainly appeared to you like you were a good, supportive daughter, which your sister was not because she's in Europe and she shouldn't have done that.
Oh, no, and there's other children,
okay.
too. But
So given that, you're saying that my mother couldn't be satisfied.
I think what she's saying is she's not a happy person.
She's blaming it on her kids. You're not a happy person. You're not gonna blame it on you could blame it on your kids, but you're not looking at yourself. So if you say this lady has just all her life struggled with being content, all her life struggled with feeling rewarded by children, and in various ways you guys have fallen short. Even
it was
though
more
you
of a control thing, Father or Dr. Ray, there's been situations over the years where she'll just invite herself into weddings and situations where, I was a maid of honor at a wedding for my best friend. My mother wasn't invited. She got on a plane with my little sister and came down to Chicago.
Maureen,
and
do you realize that while you talk here, my dear, you are supporting my answer? Because when I said that your mother's comment was basically, my children have been a disappointment to me. That's what that her comment was.
Yes.
You said
that,
no. You said, no, I've been there for 30 years and I've been very supportive. And I said, not according to your mother, you haven't.
It's not about the support she got that. She didn't get the kids she wanted. There were times we would be in such social situations. She wouldn't want to introduce us to her work friends because she was embarrassed of the way we looked.
There you go.
Or when my sister would come from
like
England,
you guys didn't meet her measure.
You're right. That is so true.
And I'm going to go one step further. I think that was her way of telling you and your sister, so there. In other words, she meant it to slap you hard. She didn't have enough insight, in my speculation, to realize that she was the one who was being narrow or being disappointed or judging her children or whatever she was doing to limit your value in her eyes. So therefore, you guys just didn't consistently measure up. So she wasn't really saying, I wish I never had children. What she was saying was, I wish I never had children who have disappointed me like you guys have. And she doesn't have enough insight, and you've described some situations here, to look at herself and say, how much of it was me? Well, so many places to go with that. Many of you are thinking, how can a mother say that about her kids? Oh, see what I said? You can't be shocked by how someone is. Mary was detailing, well, you can't detail on a radio call, but she was talking about a history of this mother being constantly disappointed because she had her own ideas about what these kids were supposed to be. And I'm going to take that a step further. I'm not sure anybody from what Mary was describing, I'm sorry, Maureen was describing, that she could have had any kids that would have pleased her. I didn't say that on the call. I should have thought of it. Say, Maureen, you're taking this personal. I think it is purely your mom. Has to be. If you say, well, how could she say this to her own children? It is based upon the idea that her view of what her kids were supposed to be like regarding meeting her needs and her expectations, which could probably be quite unrealistic, quite intolerant, didn't happen. And in the end, it was a so there at age 90. She said, no, I wouldn't have had you kids. But what she doesn't realize is that she probably wouldn't have had any kids because any of them would have disappointed her because of the way she looked at life. So often we get calls on this program where the young adults turn on their parents and say, you messed me up. I don't want to have anything to do with you. Why? Because you just weren't the parents I thought you should be. And typically, it is young adults who are screwing up their lives. It's a simple relationship. The more these young people screw up their lives, the more they're looking for somebody to blame. And who else but the parents, correct? Well, this is the reverse of that. This is probably a woman who has been miserable in so many ways for a long, long time. And she pointed to her children as the source of her misery instead of looking at herself. I know this could probably sound unrealistic, but I don't think Maureen should be bothered by any of this at all. Oh, Dr. A, come on, it's your mom. I understand that. But if she recognized, and she was starting to go into details about this history of her mom, recognize what her mom has been like all of her life. Maureen's 69 years old. This is a consistent pattern. Probably from back when they were kids. She said that she didn't even introduce us to people because she was ashamed of us. Well, holy mackerel. That is a pattern that is a lifetime long. So it doesn't surprise me at all that she would think you kids are big responsibilities in the way that I'm not happy. Well, I say that all the time as a psychologist. I got to find somebody to blame. Blame the kids. Maureen, you can live at peace because you knew in the last 30 years you were there, supportive, loving, giving to your mom. That's what you were required to do, and you did it. Did she take it well? Did she accept it? Did she appreciate it? No. As evidenced by her 90-year age remark. It's a classic. I'm miserable. I've been miserable. And it's all because of you.
What is the meaning of the Hail Mary? There are multiple meanings, explains the Catholic Catechism. When we say Hail Mary or Rejoice Mary, we are repeating the greeting of the angel Gabriel to Mary at the Annunciation. The next phrase, full of grace, the Lord is with you, asserts that Mary is full of grace because the source of grace, the Lord, is with her. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb, echoes Elizabeth when she greeted her young cousin who had come to assist her during her delivery of John the Baptist. Holy Mary, Mother of God, means that because Mary gives us Jesus, her Son, the God-man, Mary is the Mother of God and our Mother. The final plea to Mary, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death, acknowledges that we are sinners now, hoping that Mary can welcome us as our mother at the hour we die and lead us to her Son Jesus in paradise. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
We're all going to suffer. No one is getting out of this life unscathed. Even if you're an agnostic or an atheist, everyone is going to suffer. The rain falls on the just and the unjust, as our Lord tells us in the New Testament. So what do we do with it? Do we just say, oh, I'm so glad that's over, and don't learn anything from it? Or do we say, okay, God, this was not fun? Or as St. Teresa of Avila, the great doctor of the church and my patron, said, if this is the way you treat your friends, no wonder you have so few, right? Like, really, Lord? Seriously? And that's okay if you express yourself that way, obviously with respect and love, but St. Teresa of Avila did it, and so many saints expressed their frustrations that way. But at the end of the day, they still came back to God and said, okay, Lord, this really stinks, but I know somehow at the end, I'm going to come through it, and you're going to show me what you want me to do with it.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Oh, boy, I got these calls that are long, Andrew tells me. But I want to say a little bit more. Hopefully I won't use up the whole time. This kind of "you are the source of my misery" is very common in divorces. When you have one spouse that's very unhappy about the marriage, and probably unwarrantedly so. In other words, they're looking at their partner and their partner isn't anywhere near as bad as they think they are, but yet they view them as just totally unpleasant and hard to live with. So what do? Well, they head for a divorce. They're going to be happy now because the main source of their difficulty was their spouse, as they saw it, and they got rid of their spouse. Good. Now I can be happy. And what they don't realize is wherever they go, especially into another relationship, in many cases, they're taking themselves with them. And if they have this attitude of, you are the source of all of my misery, nothing of it is me, that's an attitude that will not serve them well in the future with whomever. All right, we're going to probably get this call in, and then I'll have to comment on the call after the break. We have a husband from Georgia who is he's nervous. He's worried about his wife's faithfulness.
I've got a situation. I guess my wife is seems to be trying to get very much more involved in faith and conversion and prayers and all that. However, we had a very difficult time some years back, but seems apparently multiple affairs, and I guess she was doing a lot of social media things. We were separated, and to me it just seems that if she's not going to open up to me about what she's done, that is not really repentance. And whenever I try to bring things up, like reminding her to put on her wedding ring today, she's like, well, you know, it doesn't mean anything. Just like forget, and it's not that important to me. Well, to me, it's immensely important, especially considering our history. And, you know, really sort of looking back, making me wonder if she's ever been able to, promise or you know, offer that fidelity that is essential to marriage.
And how long have you been married?
Oh, 5 kids and 24 years, I guess.
Still raising those kids, huh?
Yep. At this point, she's breadwinner, I guess, and I'm like stay-at-home dad. And, you know, my concern is, you know, I just haven't been that sort of real strong model of what, you know, a Catholic father and husband should be. And if, you know, staying with in the situation isn't maybe hurting them more than helping.
Well, if you want to look at the research, it's overwhelming that kids who are in marriages that are not the best would still rather be in those marriages with their mom and their dad than to be split.
Well, that's very true.
That's very, very true. And there is one group of studies, and there's thousands of them, that basically say divorce is bad for kids. Now, I got to qualify this because
I just need to kind of stick it out, but it's a matter of figuring out how to stick it out.
Well, I would suspect, let me qualify it first, though. I know there are people listening who had divorce thrown upon them and they had no choice. So this is not a comment to them. Theirs was a tragic situation. If you're worried about staying there, that your children might be better off if, in fact, you split up the home, the chances are very high that they wouldn't be. So that's the first thing. Was she involved in church back when she was being unfaithful?
She was beforehand, yes. And, you know, while she was in some of these relationships, and then she could spout and conventionally talk about and accurately, you know, state, you know, beliefs and et cetera regarding Catholic faith. But, you know, I just, and doing some digging afterwards, I was like, you know, she was saying one thing and living something else. And she sort of continues this with idea of, like, moral superiority and, you know, I guess whatever else.
I'd offer you this, sir. I would probably quit trying to get her to acknowledge and apologize for those previous relationships. Obviously, she doesn't want to do it. In her mind, it may be justified in her mind because you weren't the father you should be. Therefore, she was seeking happiness somewhere else. I don't know. But if she doesn't want to say, that's never going to happen again, I'm so very sorry, that was in a very confused period of my life, we weren't together at the time, whatever it is, and she's not doing it, you're going to have to let it go. And at this point, you're going to probably have to live with that you cannot be constantly suspicious. Because if you do that, one, you can't catch her anyway. I mean, if she is determined to be unfaithful again, then you can't monitor her close enough to make sure that's not going to happen. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, if she's not at this time doing that, if you continue to belabor that, or you continue to be suspicious, there's a chance you could push her into more dissatisfaction. And if she's dissatisfied, she'll think, I got a right to look elsewhere for my happiness, because he's nothing but a suspicious, accusatory person. Now, you may have every reason to be suspicious and accusatory. However, what I'm saying is, it doesn't do you any good, because you're going to have to live with a certain amount of uncertainty. If you look at some statistics, it doesn't look good for Catholics. They survey moral issues. Is sex before marriage wrong? Is divorce wrong? And what they find is that among mainline Protestants, evangelical Protestants, and Catholics, we have the most tolerant view of society's acceptables regarding morals. Now, part of that is that when someone asks, are you Catholic? Are you Protestant? Oh, I'm Catholic. But they haven't stepped inside a church for 4 years, and they just, in essence, are a practical atheist. There's just a ton of that among people who call themselves Catholics. I knew I was going to get shut off by the music here. When we come back, I'll summarize the call, and then I'll talk about a couple of the points that I want to make.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
You know, maybe we need to ask ourselves, do we really know Jesus? Maybe another way to ask that would be, how familiar are you with the Gospels? When I was living in D.C., I was on the plane taking a late flight home, sitting next to a young girl. She was probably 16, 17. I had my collar on, and we got talking, and she said, somehow in the course of the conversation, she acknowledged that she was running away from home and was in the midst of an awful lot of difficulties that were going on. Her story seemed to be remarkably akin to the story of the prodigal son, which we just heard this past Sunday at Mass, huh? And so I started to speak a little bit about that with her. And I said, you sound a little bit like the younger son in the story of the prodigal son. And she looked at me like I was from Mars. And I said, are you not familiar with the story of the prodigal son? And she says, no, never heard it. And I just looked at her and I says, oh my goodness, are you in for a wonderful evening?
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
To vent or not? If I get it off my chest, then I feel better. I've got to vent. Is this so? It's old theory, somewhat like a catharsis. You've got to purge yourself of these emotions, and Lord help anyone who's standing in the way. It's old theory. It's inaccurate. Venting is generally not good for the hearers, and it's not good for the venter. Venting may be good for dryers. It's not good for people. When we vent, we become more likely to vent. And when we are more likely to vent, we are more likely to hurt and say things we shouldn't say. Careful on the venting. Better to think about what you have to say before you vent.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, a top 10% of my class on Catholic Media School of, articulation and stuff. Good to have you with me. Just got done with a call from a husband and father of five from Georgia, who was very concerned about his wife's now and future faithfulness. History of, he says, multiple relationships outside the marriage. I really try hard not to call them affairs. That just sounds so old, fluffy. An affair is something like, ooh, it's so cool. It's kind of neat. And he's noticing even now at that time they were separated, at least for some of them. You obviously can't get into all the details. And obviously I don't know the state of the marriage either. That's the other problem. He's a stay-at-home dad. She's the breadwinner, as he says it. So I don't know if that puts the stress on it because she feels like, you know, you're not carrying your share of the load and I'm the one who's doing all this, etc. Again, you can't know. So we got to deal with what is happening right now. He's nervous because she'll say things like, well, she didn't put her ring on. And he says, put your ring on. And she says, I forget. Or, it doesn't mean that much. It doesn't mean that much to me. You don't need a ring to have a commitment. You know, all that. And he's trying to push her into being faithful or making sure she's faithful. And one of the pieces of advice I said is you can't make that happen. That's not going to happen. You have to look at yourself. I didn't say this, but I didn't say this on a call either. You got to look at yourself and you got to find out what it might be that is keeping you from being the man that you should be. and whether you're saying, yeah, but I am the man I should be, and she doesn't appreciate it. I don't know that. I don't know those details. But things that are critical here. One, as I'm going to emphasize, and I talked about right before the break, you can't monitor somebody enough to make sure they won't do this again. You can't. It's not possible. So you're going to have to give it up. You're going to have to recognize, I can't keep looking for reassurance, 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 supervision, supervision, supervision. You can't. She doesn't have her wedding ring on. She doesn't have her wedding ring on. You don't comment on it. If she shows up an hour past where you thought she was going to come home, you can't say, where you been? People don't like that. They don't like that, especially if they have mixed feelings about staying in this marriage. I probably shouldn't say mixed feelings. Mixed commitment about being in this marriage. Now, that said, he said that she's really come back to her Catholic faith. Now, I don't know how you measure that. Sadly, all too often, people measure that by devotional. I mean, she's real devotional. More praying, maybe more contact with people at church. Good things. Those are good things. But if they do not translate into love and charity, clanging gong, I'm not surprised anymore about people who have the appearance, and maybe it's even a legitimate appearance, of faith-filled Catholics doing a lot of stuff. Pray their rosary in Aramaic while they levitate. Attend Mass during the week. Stuff. Read Catholic books. But yet they're very hard to live with. Very hard to live with. Or they've done morally wrong things and somehow they justify them and they go to communion on Sundays. That doesn't shock me anymore. Especially given how everybody gets up at church and goes to communion, you got to figure there's a lot of people there that are living real, real, real wrong. We're in a place in our faith, here in the U.S. anyway, it seems to me, that we've sort of divorced what is faithful Catholicism to moral and charitable living. We have. Much harder to be moral and charitable than it is for me to pray the rosary. I can pray the rosary. Feel pretty good about myself, too, praying the rosary. Especially when I can pay attention for 5 or 6 total Hail Marys, which is kind of high for me. But at the same time, to be tolerant and forgiving of people in my life, especially when they keep doing it, that's hard. Let me pray another rosary. And it seems to be that's what he's saying about his wife. She's really got back to the Catholic faith. Now, if that's real and legit, then that should be his biggest reassurance that she's not going to do this again. And the other thing, and I mentioned this right before the break, but he's trying to get her to acknowledge and admit and repent for what she did. And she's not doing it. She does not want to do it. And it's kind of what I talked about in my monologue. If she don't want to do it, you're not going to keep pushing to get it done. It's not going to happen. You're going to have to accept that for whatever her reasons are, which she apparently doesn't tell him, she don't want to talk about it. And maybe, just maybe, she doesn't think she was wrong. That wouldn't surprise me. I'm Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Father Benedict Rochelle.
I must tell you that from what I observe from very young people, all of these blasphemers, all of these mockers are in for a tough time. Because the devil bites his own tail. And I find among young people a growing reverence and longing for God. I find decline in the cynicism and skepticism around. Because it had to destroy itself. No one can live on being an enemy of God. It's too crazy. It's too absurd. It's too dark. It's too bleak. God is beautiful. God is holy. Why in the world mock God?
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
I've seen the difference in my son since he's been at Ave Maria. He's happy, he's excited about what he's going to do with his degree, and he's living his faith.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
Shrink wrap.
Dr. Ray, you're just great.
Ain't sharing no feelings, don't know where you're at. Can't hear what you're saying, just can't go with that. My inner child says he's stunned, My grown-up self says it's a no-brainer, duh. Psycho rap, ain't doing no babble, just can't go with that. Psycho rap, you hear what I'm saying? This ain't no shrink chat. Super ego, it unconscious for sure. Freudian analysis, $6,000 or more. Head shrinking, mind blowing, brain lock, yes, hypnosis, neurosis, halitosis, Primal scream, fairy dream, bad scene, yeah. Kid's a brat, made him sad, got a swat, wow. Time out, tune in, listen up, yo. Don't blame me if your kid's on the spring show. Psycho rap, ain't doing no babble, just can't go with that. Psycho rap, you hear what I'm saying? This ain't no shrink chat. Pavlov's dog, does that ring a bell? Repression, depression, who can tell? Psychology, neurology, pathology, what? Therapy, sympathy, apathy, gut, OD, ADD, PHE. I know all the letters of the alphabet, C, PMS, IRS, EIEIO. There ain't no combinations, I don't know. Psycho rap, ain't doing no babble, just can't go with that. Psycho rap, you hear what I'm saying? This ain't no shrink cat. Oral stage, anal stage, lysis stage, yep. Antipas, animus, maximus, stop. Reflect, deflect, reject, where it's at. I'm okay, you're okay, your kid could be a bat. Self-esteem, self-image, self is all. I am me and ego, you all. Assertiveness training, don't get in my way. The only real truth is what I say. Psycho rap, ain't doing no babble, just can't go with that. Psycho rap, you hear what I'm saying? This ain't no shrink chat.
That was a well-plotted piece of non-claptrap that never made me want to retch.
Man, it's gotten into you.
That was recorded many, many years ago. I think I'm going to put it on the Instagram. My son will put it up there, and I might have to re-record it because the technology of it back then was a little shallow. For those, and speaking of social media, I struggled with Facebook. I did for years, and until I finally got a dear lady, friend, who I met years ago when we put together an infomercial, believe it or not, and she said, Ray, you know, Facebook could help people. And I said, okay, well, if it helps people. So I decided I'm going to use Facebook principles trying to make friends. I'm going to use the same principles. So what I do, I walk down the street, and I tell just people walking by what I've eaten, how I feel right at that moment, what I did the night before, what I'll do later, and when. I hand them pictures of my family, my cat, me washing the car, working in the garage, mowing the lawn, standing in front of the house, driving around town, having lunch, just doing what anybody and everybody does every day. I listen in to their conversations, and I give them a thumbs up. And I tell them I like them. And it's working. It is just working like Facebook. I already have 4 people following me. 2 police officers, a private investigator, and a psychiatrist. So I'm getting somewhere. Andrew and I were talking, and when we came back from the break, we didn't have enough time. We got 2 look-back calls up there that are both 6.5 minutes apiece. So I don't have really time to jump into those because even looking at the clock right now, we got 5 minutes left. I'll make a couple more comments. A common reason for people to come in for marriage counseling is that there has been an adulterous relationship. They want to heal. One partner regrets it. I'm sorry. The other partner may doubt this. The partner may say, well, yeah, you regret it because you got caught. All right. But nevertheless, the motivation is to heal the marriage, move forward. There's kids involved, all of that. But one of the dynamics is the aggrieved spouse has a mentality that says, I've got to make sure this never happens again. I feel like I was a fool not seeing all the signs. As I look back on it, I trivialized the signs. I explained them away. I accepted the given rationales for what was going on. I should have seen it. Well, it was a music group, The Who. We Won't Get Fooled Again. That was their one of their big hits. So the spouse is determined. You're not going to do this to me again. Where that can cause problems, though, if the relationship is trying to heal, is this level of, I don't trust you, I'm suspicious, and I'm going to keep a hawk eye on everything you do say and wherever you are, and you better fill out a form. Now, on one hand, I tell the offending spouse, you better expect this. What did you expect? Okay, when you breach this kind of trust at this level, what did you expect? You underestimated what you did. Okay, that's one. On the other side, I say to the offended spouse, if you want this to heal and to get better, you're going to have to give up this idea of, I'm going to make sure in any way I can, I will not get fooled again. What that does is it just creates that this adulterous relationship lives on in memory. It's always a big cloud. Where were you? You said you were here, you would be here at 4:30. It's 10 till 5. Why are you? I talked to your friend. You said you were going out with him and the boys, and I talked to him, and he wasn't there. Well, yeah, he didn't make it at the last minute, but I was with the other guys. Can one of them call me and let me know? So you start doing stuff like that, and it's understandable, but it's not helpful. It drags out the healing process. I know that seems counterintuitive. Dr. Ray, what do you expect when you have somebody that's been offended that deeply? The trust that they thought they had. And this is especially true when in much of the earlier days of the marriage, there was no doubt about the spouse's commitment. And then somehow, some way, you find out about this. And that makes it even tougher because generally, when these adulterous relationships are going on, they're not confessed to, and that's how they end. They're found out about, and there's always the nagging doubt. Where would that have gone had I not found out about it? What would it have been? What would it have led to? And so when you have had to have discovered it, you're thinking, well, maybe that wandering style isn't over. And what you do is you now become very, very, very hypervigilant. And it is that very hypervigilance which puts an awful lot of stress and strain on the marriage. But Dr. Ray, that's to be expected. I understand that's to be expected. But what is to be expected oftentimes isn't the best way to move on. And I always tell the spouse, if this person wanted to do this again, You can't prevent it. You can't. And in fact, in every marriage, you can't prevent something like this happening. You can believe it won't. You can trust your partner. But realistically, you cannot prevent something like this. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I appreciate it so very much. Good Lord permit. Now see you Monday on E-Person Money. Thanks, Andrew Krucek, for all you do over there in Ave. Walk with God. You walk with God, and you'll just be a better person to live with all the way around.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.